most of my books are written with an eye, first and foremost, the general public. And then they also have some appeal to professors and scholars in the field of communication, but I try to write to a broad audience. This book, I think, is similar to that, with the slight exception that I take particular aim at academics and researchers and scholars and students in the field of communication at American universities, and talk about how I think they need to really get their act together.
You mentioned in the first chapter how academic elitists in other social sciences, like sociology or psychology, turn up their noses to the field of communications. Can you further explain that?
So at some universities, the field of communication study media is prominent, and others it's marginal. So it's not uniform or identical everywhere. But in general, the field of media studies or communication tends to be a second-tier field on most U.S. campuses, certainly compared to the mainline social sciences like sociology, anthropology, history, political science. And the reason for that is many, but two core reasons are, one, that communication tends to be very interdisciplinary, meaning that there are multiple disciplines and methodologies, even more so than virtually another department or field. And the other reason is that communication has traditionally been closely allied to professional practices, journalism, advertising, people who make movies or produce films. And I think in the hierarchy of universities, practical work, applied work, is always held a notch below theoretical work or basic work.
FCC Commissioner Michael Copps, one of the two Democrats on the commission, said that if media reform isn't a person's number one priority, it ought to be their second. Why is it so important, yet receives so little press coverage?
Well, I'll try to answer for Mr. Copps. I think that the general thinking is of Mr. Copps and others who've made similar statements is that no matter what you're interested in, how that issue plays out will be determined to no small extent by how it's covered or not covered in the news media or the media more broadly. And therefore, you know, if you're concerned about war and peace issues, environmental issues, issues of social justice, you've got to be every bit as concerned about the media and how they cover those issues, because if they do a bad job, all your labor otherwise might be thrown down the drain. And I think that's the point of that quote of Mr. Copps, and I think that's a widely held sentiment. As for the second part of your question, is why the issue does not get a great deal of media coverage, that's an interesting question. I write about it a bit in the book, and I've done a lot about it in my other work. I think there's a lot of reasons for that, but the primary one is that this is an issue that hits very close to home to the people who own our media, and they're not especially interested in publicizing it because traditionally the less publicity there is about these issues, the less public participation there will be. And they like that, because the less public participation means they get to make the policies behind closed doors and they get to own the system.
You speak of three critical junctures in your book. Can you explain them and where we are now?
In the last 100 years, there have been three main critical junctures in which the media system was in crisis and in process of transformation. It could have gone in any number of directions with profound implications for where we are today. And the first one was 100 years ago during the Progressive Era, when professional journalism emerged as the solution to the crisis of highly partisan, highly commercial, highly corrupt journalism, which dominated in the late Gilded Age, in the early Progressive Era, and in the Progressive Era and totally. And professional journalism was the way out of the crisis of journalism of that era, which was held in great disrepute by the public. It was considered even probably, it had less credibility in the 100 years ago than it does today, and today we're at probably the low ebb since 100 years ago. And the solution to that crisis was the creation of the idea of professional journalism, of a separation of owner from editor, and that you could read a monopoly newspaper in a town, and since the editors and reporters were trained professionals, you didn't have to worry about the political views of the owners or the influence of advertisers. There'd be sort of a firewall between the two. That was the principle of professional journalism, which was really the rule for better or for worse until today. But commercial pressures over the last quarter century have pretty much overwhelmed much of the autonomy and protection and strength that professional journalism brought us at its best. Second critical juncture came with the emergence of radio broadcasting in the 1920s and early 1930s. This required society to come to terms with how to handle the scarce number of channels that were available for broadcasting. And there was a real battle in this country about who should control the limited number of radio channels and for what purposes. Most other countries in the world at that time opted for public services without advertising. The United States, in the most corrupt manner imaginable and over considerable public opposition, handed the broadcasting system over to two main networks, NBC and CBS, to have the system supported by the sale of advertising. That was a critical juncture because it really paved the way for modern commercial broadcasting as we know it. When television came along and later satellites and cable, it was simply assumed that corporations would run them to sell advertising. The fight really took place back in the 20s and 30s. So those were the two main critical junctures. That we had made different decisions in both those periods. American media and probably political history could have gone in quite different directions. Then today we're in one now. The internet, the cell phones, the digital revolution are meaning that existing media industries are in the process, and communication industries are in a process of fundamental transformation. Even if one loves the status quo is changing no matter what. And it's going to be up to us to determine what will replace it. It's not purely a technological revolution. It also entails the fact that our journalism is in deep crisis. Commercialism is polluting our environment to such an extent that there's tremendous dissatisfaction with the content of our media. And I think the missing ingredient right now, what we had in the 1930s and what we certainly had in the Progressive Era, was a broader sort of social questioning of the dominant institutions in society. And if we get that, then I think there's a chance this critical juncture could lead to dramatically different types of media and communication systems. Without that, we'll still have change, but it'll be more likely to be change dominated by corporate interests.